Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The home team.
And here we go.
All right, to kick it off hour number two, the home team, presented by Golden Pantry. Eat, drink, be golden. Chris and Jeff till 7, and then we'll have the coverage of the Braves and Red Sox as they play the second of a three-game series tonight. And a brutal week, really, for Atlanta with the Sox tonight and then tomorrow afternoon, and then they head right out to Arizona, who are, by the way, the Diamondbacks are no longer in first place, right? The Rockies now are sole possession of first place in the National League West.
Now, the Dodgers had snuck in there too, my man. They have won 8 out of 10. There's a half-game difference.
But are the Rockies, though, on top?
Let me pull it up. I think it was the Dodgers by half-game over the Rockies.
No, the Rockies are in first.
So who's in? The Dodgers are half-back?
Arizona, in fact. They've fallen a game and a half back now all of a sudden.
So we could be looking at – all right, so Colorado's half up on L.A., 1.5 up on Arizona. We could get our wish and get a playoff for the National League West and for the wild card. Because right now you got Milwaukee – and St. Louis, both out of the Central, are tied for that wild card. What's happened, too, with the Phillies falling back? And, you know, the Braves are 4-6 in their last 10. The East is only getting one team in, unless something really crazy happens.
Yeah. No, you're right. It's going to be the winner of that of the division because the Phillies, they're at 72 wins. And did they lose yesterday to the Marlins?
Yeah, they've lost 3 in a row. Yeah, that's one thing. Atlanta's still in great shape to win the division, but as much as the Phillies have struggled, I know the Braves would have liked to have created maybe a little bit more of a gap.
Yeah, but this is a week where if you're the Phillies, I mean, they're playing the Marlins and the Braves are playing the Red Sox, and they don't gain any ground yesterday. Atlanta did lose to Boston, but, losing to the Marlins, come on.
What's most important, though, Chris, the Orioles on a 4-game losing streak are 54.5 in back of Boston.
Have they reached 40 wins yet?
Yes.
Oh, that's too bad.
So the 62 Mets have been caught.
Oh, well.
They're 40-98.
Oh, they're right at it. Okay. Well, they'll probably get at least one more win. We still pretty much have the whole month of September to go.
You know who's actually been playing good? This is crazy about baseball. The White Sox just smoked the Yankees and the Red Sox last week. The Chicago White Sox are 56-82. They've won 7 of their last 10. They went 2-2 in New York and I think took 3 out of 4 from Boston.
Yanks got a taste of what that one game playoff's going to look like.
Ooh.
Last night. Lost to the A's.
Boy, it was. Well, there are a lot of Yankees fans there too, but it was a great crowd.
Oh, I went to an A's game. They played the Yankees several years ago and it was. There were more Yankees fans there than A's fans.
Do like having McCutcheon added to the Yanks there, but it's the best time of year in sports. Tough right now for Big John. Del Potro has just really gotten into a groove. Is it 3-0 now in the fourth?
Yeah, Del Potro held, so Isner down. It's 3-0, but it is only one break. But I think Isner's had 2 break points the entire match. So
well, that third set breaker took a lot of wind out of his sails, and there was a game. I believe it was 1-1 in that third set. Del Potro was serving at 15-40, and he wound up.
I think it was Love 40.
Was it Love 40? Yeah, and he wound up holding there. So against a guy like that, you gotta.
Those are the only break chances John's had today.
And John's been. I mean, and this is. For what he's done this season, for what he's done this year, for what he's done in this tournament after Wimbledon, this is definitely a house money type match. But, when he won that first set, all right, got a chance. And certainly to get that third set into a breaker, but to lose there, I know it took some wind out of his sails. But he is really playing great, and he's had an unbelievable summer. It's been a lot of fun. And, hopefully he can rally back here. Like I said, it's just one break. But, boy, Del Potro, I was – so impressed with him, Chris, on Sunday when he beat, what's the guy's name?
Chorich.
Chorich, did he beat? I mean, his forehand looks just as good as it ever has, and it looks like a buggy whip back there. Del Potro, as big as John is, Delpo's like 6'5", and just the torque he could generate on that thing, I think it's as good a forehand as there is for a right-handed player. Rafa's lefty forehand's still awfully good, but I think Delpo for a righty, if I could fine-tune it and pick a perfect game for a northpaw, I'd have John serve. I think Delpo's forehand, it'd be who I'd want. And I'd have to go with Fed's backhand.
Yeah, I mean, Fed's got every game. I like Stan the Man's backhand because he unleashes that thing
and
like
Gasquet.
Gasquet has the sweet one-hander. But the thing about Stan's backhand is how all of a sudden, I mean, it's just a rocket that he'll hit where it almost feels like a forehand, but it comes out of nowhere because he'll sort of like feels like he pulls it back slow and then just unleashes it.
It's got to be whatever the muscle on the outside of your arm is, it runs along the bicep there.
Yeah.
I don't know, but he gets some serious pop on it.
All right, so we'll keep you posted on what's happening with Isner. He's serving to try and avoid going down two. If he goes down two breaks, the match is over, but he is still down only one, but he hadn't had a lot of cracks on Del Potro's serve today. All right, time for the 5 at 5, brought to you by Duplicating Systems, more than a system, a solution. Jeff, let's pretend you're talking to someone who didn't watch the Georgia game this Saturday because they played Austin Peay and, you know, like Auburn and Washington were playing at the same time. So, Jeff, tell us what we would have missed.
I think Georgia checked off the boxes on Saturday, averaged 8.3 yards a run, 8.6 yards a pass, had the big plays. Robertson and Hardman both had electric. One was a run, one was a catch and run. And, you know, the defense put up a shutout. Anytime you can do that, you're playing good. Are there some areas where Georgia's going to have to get better? Absolutely. Absolutely. You're going to have to get better across the board. It's going to be a huge test. A couple of other things. Now, two of them were touchbacks. Jake Camarda's got a tremendous leg. Rodrigo was booming him out of the end zone. The defensive front, you're going to see a lot of guys playing there. I thought Monty Rice played really well. Those young guys in the secondary, it was good for them to get their feet wet. Tyson Campbell actually got the start at the corner opposite DeAndre Baker. The offensive line is quite large, and a lot of guys played. 83 guys played.
Yeah, and those offensive linemen played a lot of different positions. I guess one interesting thing about the O-line is that Kendall Baker, who was the returning starter last year, really only played with the second unit.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, Kenley got the start.
Yeah, the moving train started in his place there. So,
but that right side, I mean, with Cleveland and Wilson, could be really good. I want to say this too. I think Georgia offensive line is going to be really good, but it's important to remember. Yeah, Gilliard's a senior, but a lot of these guys are still young. I mean, Isaiah Wilson's a redshirt freshman. Ben Cleveland's a redshirt sophomore. Andrew Thomas is a sophomore. You know, Mays, Salyer, Hill, those guys are freshmen. Schaefer's a sophomore. Notori Johnson's a redshirt freshman. So it's going to be even better next year.
Yeah, I mean, if I were to, like, maybe if there was one point of minor, like, concern, because even if I told you, like, last year, Georgia ranked 47th and 39th in the country in getting stuffed, runs that were stuffed, and, you know, success in power situations, which is like, you know, picking up 1 or 2 yards to move the chains on third, fourth down, or even in goal line situations. Now, those aren't terrible nationally numbers, but if I told you that, knowing that we had Chubb, Michelle, and Swift, if I said Georgia ranked 39th and 47th in those categories, you probably wouldn't believe it. And, you know, even Swift on Saturday had 8 carries, and half of them went for 3 yards or less. So I feel like when Georgia was running at them, we weren't really like it wasn't when Georgia was the most successful running the ball.
One thing that Georgia and a lot of other teams fight, and I know there's this push, and listen, things go cyclical, to not have a fullback. Georgia had a great fullback in Christian Payne. The numbers might get skewed sometimes, but if you look at the number of runs, not just for Georgia but for any team, if you've got the quarterback under center without a fullback in there, it gets really crowded and you don't have that fullback to clean out the hole. It is hard to run inside. I could even remember going back with Bama when they had Derrick Henry. This must have been in 2014. You remember they beat Arkansas up in Fayetteville. I think it was 14-13. I mean, they had a couple of third and ones with Derrick Henry. They lined up with no fullback, QB under center. They flat out could not get it. So I think you're running into a situation now when you get short yardage, you either need to run out of that shotgun, which, you know, when you're inside the red zone, that's not the optimum thing to do, or you got to find somebody to put in there at fullback.
Well, and I know
we
use
clean out that hole.
The tight ends would sit there as like an H-back for a couple of those for a couple of those runs. I still feel like fullback or no fullback, you got to be able to blow Austin Peay off the ball.
You can knock
them
back.
They're an FCS opponent.
Yeah, they are. You can knock them back, but still, it becomes a numbers game, and anybody you can clog those holes up. Now, and you're exactly right to your concern. At the same time, Georgia didn't do a ton of exotic stuff with the tailbacks. I mean, Austin Peay was totally selling out to stop the run. So pretty much in the first half, Georgia was just using those dynamic offensive weapons, flipping it out, short passes to the receivers, the end arounds, and obviously Georgia was able to overwhelm them. But yeah, Georgia's gonna have to really hunker down and grind it in the run game on Saturday, because, you know, clearly South Carolina is going to have far, far superior athletes than what we saw this past weekend.
Speaking of Saturday, Jeff, the date of that game is September the 8th, the 8th day of the month.
Mm-hmm.
Has that does that increase your level of anxiety for the game, or did you even realize that up until the point that I just mentioned it to you?
I know exactly that it is, because there's another factor, too. I think it's when they beat us in 07. A friend of mine named Laurie Douglas, who went to South Carolina, her and her husband Bill went to South Carolina, saw them about a month before the game. I could go check the date. I think it was the 07 game when they beat us. And she brought up, she goes, oh, the game, it's on my birthday this year. I go, oh, we're going to lose. So she sent me a little note today and said, just a reminder that my birthday is the day of the game this year. Y'all take it easy on my Gamecocks. I was like,
okay. Yeah.
Well, because there was, of course, we know January 8th, and then Patrick Reed won the Masters on April the 8th. There's something else that happened on the 8th day of a month.
Those
were bad enough, I know.
Both of those took away the reason to live, especially the first one. But
So here we are. First big game of the season is on the 8th day of the month.
On 9-8. And I think now when you look at it, and again, listen, Georgia's only had the one great season these last few years. So we're on the way. Kirby's doing great things here. And I'm standing by 19-20. I think Georgia is going to be as good as any team in the country. And I'm confident we'll have a great shot to get back to the playoff and have a chance to win the whole thing. But there is definitely some reloading this year. And now there's no question. With what LSU did, with what Auburn did over the weekend, and I know it was Charleston Southern with Florida, but you know, Dan Mullen's a much better coach there. I think the schedule after one weekend, and things can change, I think the schedule looks more challenging than a lot of Georgia fans thought it did before the season.
Well, I mean, LSU is, one side of the ball they were going to be a force on, it was going to be defense. You know, Auburn's defense was outstanding against, you know, Washington, particularly in the red zone. I mean, mm-hmm. if you look at, like, Washington's numbers, I mean, Browning did average, like, over 9 yards a pass on Saturday, but it was just they bogged down inside the red zone to have three separate goal-to-go situations and end up with 6 points.
That's that D-line.
And once they even, you know, the other one was they doinked a kick, too. So, and they were just attempting field goals. They weren't scoring touchdowns, and it, you know, it burned them.
Yeah, and that's to your point. I mean, they've got the second-best D-line behind Clemson, and, you know, Auburn might be next. Georgia's got a really good D-line. Chris, I think a big key for Georgia's success, and I love the depth on the front, is there going to be a guy who becomes a great player on that front? I mean, a player who has 6-7 sacks, 10-12 tackles for loss on that defensive line. I just think that's a key. I mean, you look at it, who won it last year. Deron Payne was this reckless force. I mean, when Auburn beat Georgia last year on the Plains, Derrick Brown, Jeff Holland, Georgia just had a devil of a time blocking those guys. And obviously Clemson, you know, the defensive line is their key right there. So is there – and we know Georgia got a lot of good players on that D-line. Is there going to be that just great player that emerges this year? Saturday will be that first big test.
Yeah, I mean, Tyler Clark, that'd be who I'd put my money on him being that guy that emerges as that potential force there on the defensive line. But nothing quite like Ed Oliver, who's a defensive lineman and racked up another double-digit tackle performance and had like 4.5, 5.5 tackles for loss or something.
Why didn't Herman try and talk that guy into transferring? They'd have probably beat Maryland with him.
I know, right? How do you just leave him at Houston?
That's one of those two. You got to think when you're recruiting, it's like, I think I can get this guy, but it's like, well, yeah, I'm only going to have him for a year. But then if I do, well, why don't you go into Texas? Okay, he might be good enough that the other guy doesn't get fired. It's a delicate balance.
Yeah. All right, moving on to the 5-5. As far as Georgia, you know, some of the new faces that we saw on Saturday, we know, you know, despite the opponent, the guys that played last year, like, they're good. But with some of these new, we saw Fields play, James Cook play, you know, Campbell on defense, you know, all the Otis Reese on defense, some of these new players. I mean, how much are you sold on what you saw from them, or is it still like, you know, I don't know. They played well against Austin Peay.
I think it's they played well against Austin Peay, but they all look good. I can tell you this, just a couple of things. I mean, Fields is going to bring a lot of different elements to Georgia. I mean, what Georgia's got at quarterback is simply dynamic.
Well, that throw you were talking about that he made that probably would be picked this Saturday.
Uh-huh.
I mean, the first touchdown pass Fromm threw last year in that game against App State would have been picked in the SEC too. So.
Exactly. But Fields, you can see it. And again, all these guys look really good. They were just on special teams and on defense. I thought Adam Anderson had a couple plays where he really kind of jumped out at me. But again, for most of these freshmen on defense, for most of them, those linebackers that were so highly touted, most of their action is going to come on special teams. Brenton Cox was in there a lot. He looked really good. There was one play where he pressured the passer, and I'm sorry, the quarterback, he was the pitch man. He pitched it out, and I think it was a spot where George had a couple of tacklers there, and one of our tacklers knocked one of our tacklers off the guy, and he squirted free, and Cox was back in on the tackle. So I'd say out of the freshmen on defense, he was probably the one on the front that looked the best. But all those guys are big. All those guys can run. Anderson certainly looked good. Cox certainly looked good. And, yeah, I mean, when Fields tucked it down to run, just the element with everything that Jake Fromm can do and with Fields being added to that, Georgia's going to be really good at quarterback. And, I mean, Cook, you know, I mean, he when he got in the open field, the guy looks really good.
Did we throw to the tight ends enough?
Now I caught a touchdown.
Yeah, I know.
And by the way, on Swift,
you didn't get any of those calls after the game, though?
No. In fact, that was on. We didn't have a record number of calls Saturday. I think everybody was, you know, kind of worn out, and it was pretty much over. But I'll tell you, like Charlie Werner on a Swift's touchdown that made it 10-0, got a great seal and made a tremendous block to let him squirt free for a touchdown. But it was funny. And by the way, happy birthday, Coach Dooley, today, 86 years old.
Yeah, he was at the bookstore Saturday.
It's great.
He'll be back in 2 weeks, too.
He sat sat next to he and the great Claude Felton on Saturday. And it was funny. When we had gone up, I think 24-0, people started leaving. And then when it was 31-0, I think that's when Mecole might have had the long catch and run to make it 31. No, that one made it 38-0. At that point, when about half the crowd was on the way out, and Coach Julie and I were just talking about how hot it was and we're bringing up hot games, and he just looked up and said, "Yeah, Jeff, I think a lot of our fans are just going to go ahead and go to the bar and watch the rest of it on TV." And I said, "Yeah.
Sounds like a good idea."
Because it was just awful. It was awful.
Yeah, that was
so
one of the
hot.
Hottest.
It was one
of the hottest days I can remember from recent.
And it's just I know the
mixing air, in the humidity and everything.
That was it. I think the air temp might have only been like 92 or something, but it's still the humidity and the like. It was brutal, and especially for our fans on the north side who are right in the sun. When the crowd emptied out, the south side pretty much everybody just moved over there because the south side was in the shade.
Yeah, that's a good call.
Yeah,
move
smart
into
play.
All right, moving on. A couple things. Big picture from the weekend in college football. Is there a team, I mean, either good or bad, that has, after 1 week, has changed your mind about them? What you believed about them a week ago before they played versus, you know, how you view them now after we did see just one game from them?
I certainly don't think LSU is going to go 5-7. Now, again, a lot of things can change. Who knows? That defense is really good. Burrow, I think, is a good quarterback.
I would say if I took the LSU under 8.5, or I guess they were 7.5.
It was.
I wouldn't consider that a loss. I wouldn't chalk that up as an L just yet. Their schedule still is brutal the rest of the way.
It's very tough, and you never know how things pan out. I mean, Miami might turn out to just be awful. I mean, now one thing about Coach Richt, with him, when it looked like the sky was falling a couple of times, he did a really good job of rallying the troops.
Yeah.
He really did. So, although, can you imagine after a loss like that, their guys have got to be in the locker room. I don't know who they play this week.
Savannah State.
Well, they should win that.
Then
one.
They go to
there
Toledo.
It's like, man, we got to go to Toledo? Really? That's awful.
Yeah. Well, they're at Virginia the week after they play the Noles.
That's a dangerous game for them.
Yes, then they're at BC on that Friday night.
That's a dangerous game.
And then they've got the back-to-back roadies against Tech and Virginia Tech.
I was kind of high on Virginia Tech in the offseason, and you know, Florida State had their issues. But, I mean, just watching that eyeball test, Virginia Tech looked good last night.
Yeah, I mean, and they should be 5-0 going into that home game against Notre Dame. I think the toughest test to be that road game at Duke. That's not a gimme or anything, but their next three are William & Mary, East Carolina, who just lost to an FCS, and Old Dominion, who got blown out by Liberty in their FBS maiden voyage. What was it, 52-10?
Yeah, it was bad.
Yeah, they got smoked by Liberty. Now, that game is at Old Dominion, but
that's bad.
I still don't feel like Virginia Tech will have too much trouble there.
Now, let me ask you this. I mean, would you be in agreement? For Washington, that was a tough loss, but they can rebound from that. They can absolutely rebound from that, still have a great year. Obviously, they can win the Pac-12. Auburn probably be the best team they play this year. Is it that obvious? Are the two teams, if you're a major program, that you are the most concerned about? It's got to be Florida State and Miami, right?
Florida State, Miami. I mean, I'm telling you, like Michigan State and Penn State, they pulled out wins there. But I mean, Sparty struggled with Utah State and
Michigan too. I know it was Notre Dame in South Bend, but I'm like you. And Harbaugh played quarterback. It just their offense just
it's just
it doesn't look sophisticated.
No, I mean they've got a guy who should be in the shotgun, and he's constantly under center. But it's not just that. It's you're down 24-10. And the 10, I mean, their only points at that point had been on a kick return.
Mm-hmm.
So their offense had scored a field goal. And, you know, they're in the fourth quarter, and they're in the I formation. And what year is it? So, I mean, he's –
that's okay if you're up 24-10.
Yeah, he's not going anywhere, but it's all of a sudden. They are. 2 years ago, they were 5 points away from playing in the – they'd have been in the playoff.
But they're also now, I mean, for Michigan fans, and I know he's one of them and they love him, but the bottom line is, you know, you ask any coach at any SEC Big Ten school, the record's one thing. It's also who you beat. And now 1-6 against the Spartans, the Buckeyes, and the Fighting Irish. That's not good.
Well, and now they've got that deal, too, where – and it's going to keep getting brought up until they break it.
Road.
But the record on the road, and they've got at Michigan State and at Ohio State. And that's not even counting that they got to play Wisconsin this year, too.
You know who was a big winner this weekend, Chris? The media that covers Ohio State on a daily basis, because I'm sure it was refreshing getting to interview Ryan Day as opposed to Urban Meyer.
So, even after his defense gave up 31 points to Oregon State. I believe the most points they scored last year was like 33, and that was against Portland State. Which brings us to the conclusion of today's 5 at 5. Team that you think got the biggest win this season and first week, and then which is the team that had the loss that's going to end up haunting them the most?
LSU had to have the biggest win for a haunting loss. I don't know, Chris. I just look at Florida State and I think they're staring right down the barrel of going like 6-6 again.
Yeah, I think that was just it was just bad, ugly to lose 24-3 at home. I think Notre Dame had the biggest win though.
That's a good call. Yeah,
I mean Michigan is one of the best toughest teams they're going to face all season now. I mean the Virginia Tech game on the road has a different look to it now, but from what we saw at a Florida State and even USC, even though that game's in LA, they don't have a lot. Standing in their way now.
I'll tell you what, Chris. I thought Stanford got a good win against San Diego State.
That was one of those games, though, where college football happens. They were being dominated in that game. San Diego State owned the lines of scrimmage. They're up 7-0. They get an interception on a tipped pass, and the big defensive lineman catches it. And, of course, he gets hit from behind and fumbles it. So Stanford gets it right back, and on that ensuing possession – they throw a 50-yard touchdown pass.
That's the way it goes.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Like, yeah, I mean, that's one of those where scoreboard looks good for Stanford, but dig deeper into that box score. And Stanford going to South Bend at the end of the month is not one where I think Notre Dame would be an underdog.
Brian Kelly's a better X's and O's guy than Shaw is.
Yeah.
By the way, SC and Stanford play this week. That'll be a good game.
Yeah. SC.
It's on the farm.
UNLV covered against SC.
The lights didn't go out or anything.
The lights did not go. They didn't have to. They were covering. It was when they weren't covering that the lights went out.
Wisconsin game.
Yeah.
I need to find out if – I wonder if the Georgia ticket paid.
Yeah, it did. You got to play at least
55
minutes. Yeah. So I'm sure they made sure that was going to be official. Although, depending on where you got that, but that line closed at like 45.5 or 46.
Oh,
so if you waited until game day to get Georgia, you lost.
What?
Yeah. All right, we'll take a break. That's your 5 at 5 brought to you by Duplicating Systems, more than a system, a solution.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.